Today is February 3rd, 2016, and this is episode number 344 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Hi, I'm a friendly fellow. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Yeah, and considering that Brian is a friendly fella.
Hi!
You'll get a happy response.
Hi!
Oh.
You know, I have a song.
Do you have a song?
The friendly fella has his own theme song.
Does he?
Yes.
Now?
Yes. He will not sing it.
Oh. Well, I've heard it before.
It's true. You have. Yes. If you, dear listener, see me in person and decide not to run, if you ask me to sing the friendly fella song, I will do so.
Ask him to sing it.
Let's see here. It's what is this? February? It's the first week of February already, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Leap year month, is that right?
That's right.
Doing 29 days or 30? What's going on this month?
Well, typically when we have a leap month, we get 29 days.
Yeah, but there's, you know, that once every like X amount of decades, you get the 30 days.
We're going to go with 29. Century.
It might be a century, but it's 29 this year. 29 days. 29 days. Right. Yeah. Well, this is a really exciting podcast so far. So let's jump right into the fact that the Internet of Things is a surveillance playground.
Hi.
That's our shout out to all the folks at the NSA.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not like they don't know what we're saying anyhow.
It's true. So now the backdrop here, of course, is the longstanding debate over encryption, and the intelligence world and law enforcement basically wanting to be able to get our communications when they want to. And I the backdrop for me saying it that way is that the problem is when law enforcement and surveillance gets at our communications, that sometimes they want to do so when they shouldn't, and mm-hmm. when they don't necessarily have the proper legal right to do so.
Right. And I'm sure sometimes it's a case of law enforcement just simply wanting an easy path to get at what they want.
Absolutely. It's almost always driven by the absolute best motives. But, you know, the problem is when that stuff gets perverted in the future by, you know, people who think that they're justified in whatever it is that they want to do. That's the issue. That's why we have this stuff codified in our law.
Right. Yeah. We need to have those guidelines in place, because without them, then there just will be no protection for our privacy.
Yeah, or, you know, you get to where the president is using the FBI to surveil his political enemies, which happened under Nixon with J. Edgar Hoover's FBI.
Mm-hmm. And that went over poorly.
Yeah. Anyway, so here's the point. The current debate is over the end-to-end encryption that Apple made default, and then Google followed and made default with Android, but Apple was doing it first with iOS. And end-to-end encryption that Apple doesn't have the keys to, device-level encryption that Apple doesn't have the keys to, mm-hmm. and it drives surveillance. I'm sorry, intelligence and law enforcement people nuts, because they have found it very convenient for stopping the bad guys by being able to intercept communications on the interwebs.
You know, I think part of the problem here is that, along with that convenience, is a lack of understanding of the technology. And I think in many cases, politicians and law enforcement agencies are seeing the encryption that is being provided at a device level as the problem. The real problem is that people don't want to have government agencies seeing what they're doing. And the people that are really serious about it are going to be using encryption systems that are independent of whatever the device is they're using in many cases.
Right. That's the longstanding, understanding. And to me, it's less, I don't want the government watching my communications out of principle, not out of a specific concern. And that principle being that, there will come a time when that ability is used for political reasons or, when things turn scary dark and, you know, one group or another becomes persecuted, which happens cyclically in every society.
Mm-hmm.
But even more important than that are the criminal organizations wanting to do the same thing and foreign governments wanting to be able to gather their own snooping for either political, military, or industrial reasons. Right? I mean, that's happening all the time, which this is why we need protection, and it's why we need protection that no one, including the device maker, has access to.
I agree, because if one person has access, I mean, outside of us as the end user, then that means other people can have access as well.
Right. Enter a Harvard study called Don't Panic, Making Progress on the Going Dark Debate. And this study, which had several signatories in the academic and in the academic world, it also had participants in the U.S. government who did not sign because they are not allowed to sign such things.
Right.
But I think their names were noted as participants in the study, but they're not signatories.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's two looks at this. So basically what the study says is, you know, hey, law enforcement, hey, intelligence services, stop freaking out about your inability to snoop on smartphones, because there's this brave new world of internet connected devices, the Internet of Things, where you can do plenty of snooping.
Right. And in many cases, it'll probably be easier snooping.
Probably be substantially easier snooping. And we're going to get to that in a bit.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay. So the types of devices that I started thinking about once I realized that it's more than our phones that are really tracking us. People should be paying attention to what they're doing with, say, baby monitors that are on the internet, or at least internet accessible.
Well, let's jump to that after we finish talking about the study itself.
Okay, let's talk about the study.
So that the cynical argument is, the cynical view of the study is that they're just, you know, telling law enforcement to stop whining about your smartphones, because you can always just go spy on people using these internet connected devices. But the less cynical, and that was definitely my initial impression of the study. I think it was yours too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The less cynical version is that it's a much higher level argument. And the Harvard study is saying, hey, law enforcement, you're not going dark. You just need to stop fixating on the things you already know and realize that there's this ever evolving, can I use the word panoply here?
Go for it.
Is that, what's the definition of panoply?
You're looking it up, aren't you?
Of course I am.
That's the best.
A complete or impressive collection of things. Oh, perfect.
See?
Perfect. All right. I pulled the right word out of the ethernet. So that there's this panoply of devices where you can do all the snooping you want. So you're not going dark. You just need to go look somewhere else. And that's about sort of having this mind frame. The study is really saying that law enforcement should not be claiming to be going dark, or in other words, that they're being shut out of what all the bad guys are doing, just because everybody has encryption on their smartphones. They should not be complaining. That is not a valid argument, because there's lots of other places and ways that that law enforcement and intelligence services can surveil people.
You know, yeah, and I think that's a really good point that many law enforcement agencies are completely missing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Completely. First of all, they're missing the technical side, which is that if anyone's got a key, everyone has access to the key, right? They're completely missing that. But they're, you know, I kind of go back to the wake of the 9/11 attacks, when our intelligence services found themselves at a complete disadvantage because they didn't have any boots on the ground anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there had been this big collective pullback to just collecting stuff across the internet and collecting stuff across the communication infrastructure around the world, rather than actually having human assets who were developing other human assets.
You know, and it's unfortunate that happened, because losing out on people being, as you said, boots on the ground, that is a huge, huge loss. There's so much that you can do when you have a person that can physically go and look at something, or go and do something, or go and talk to someone. And you can get so much that way without having to worry about any level of encryption.
Right. And the intelligence services in particular, it's so easy to just scoop up information and sift through it. It seems like from the outside, that fixation has kind of made everybody lazy.
Well,
it's really easy for me to say that sitting here in my bedroom.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, in the studio.
In the studio.
Across from you.
Right. Hi, Brian.
And I'm actually in my office, not in my bedroom, but.
I know, mostly pedantic. Okay. So where was I going before we got sidetracked by where you're actually sitting? Awesome. I completely forgot.
Because we're top men.
Top men. Law enforcement, investigations, and people on the ground. And I know where I was going. There's something very seductive about being able to just siphon more information than you can possibly process, because more information to many people equates to better in intel. And that's not the case. I mean, you can have rooms filled with servers and hard drives loaded up with data that you can't do anything with because you just don't know how to use it.
Yeah, but you might be able to use it someday. And I think that's part of what they're thinking.
Well, sure. And that's part of the seduction of wanting to have access, unfettered access to all this information. Because what if you do need it?
Right. And it's also why they get cranky when people and technology push back against that and start doing things like, in this case, end-to-end user encryption makes that bulk collection a lot harder. And the fixation is on, like, well, we want to keep doing that because that was really awesome.
Right. And
and the only way we can keep doing that is if we put these artificial constraints that actually won't help anything, but it'll still be awesome.
I think that's an incredibly wonderful way to sum up the whole thing right there.
Thanks.
Yeah, because that's exactly what it is. It's wanting the data for the sake of having the data, not for having information that's genuinely useful. It's like our government has become a hoarder.
Yeah, well, the surveillance apparatus has become a hoarder.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So, with that in mind, we've got this argument where law enforcement is saying we're going dark. You know, this encryption is a bad thing. You gotta legislate something here because you know we're going dark. The Harvard study says, well, no, you're not, because there's all these other things you can do. All these other, you know, like the one of their examples was actually. Should I read some quotes from that?
Yes. Yeah. There's some really good lines out of there.
Let's see. So we'll start with the setup. There is a general. This is a quote. There is a general sense by actors within both the intelligence and law enforcement communities that, were all else equal, they would benefit if technological architectures did not present a barrier to investigations. To be sure, all else is not equal. For example, if all communications were routinely unencrypted, citizens would be exposed to surveillance from myriad sources, many of whom might be viewed as national security threats by those citizens' governments. Duh.
Right.
It's very, 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 very well put, I think. Nice. It's a nice, succinct way to sum up that situation. So if the U.S. government were to mandate architectural changes, surveillance could be made easier for both the U.S. government and foreign governments, including autocratic regimes known to crack down on political dissidents. The comparatively well-developed legal doctrines, procedural requirements, and redress mechanisms that serve as backstops to the U.S. government's surveillance activities are not mirrored worldwide. Again, well said.
Yep. Well said. The one thing I would have changed in that is where they said crack down. I would have changed that to persecute, because I think that's more accurate.
Yeah, fair enough. So to that end, the Internet of Things, and I'm quoting again, the Internet of Things promises a new frontier for networking objects, machines, and environments in ways that we are just beginning to understand. When, say, a television has a microphone and a network connection, and it is reprogrammable by its vendor, it can be used to listen in on one side of a telephone conversation taking place in its room, no matter how encrypted the telephone service itself might be. These forces are on a trajectory towards a future with more opportunities for surveillance.
Yeah, there you go. And to me, that's more in line with the boots on the ground approach, even though it's not really boots on the ground.
It's not at all.
No, but it's more like that, because with boots on the ground, you would have someone that maybe has like a little portable microphone and radio transmitter, so they could be nearby and eavesdrop on a conversation. In a manner of speaking, that's what they're talking about doing here. It's just they're going through the internet and finding a device that's an Internet of Things device in your house, and then using that to eavesdrop on you.
Right. To that end, quote, law enforcement or intelligence agencies may start to seek orders compelling Samsung, Google, Mattel, Nest, or vendors of other network devices to push an update or flip a digital switch to intercept the ambient communications of a target. These are all real products now. If the Internet of Things has as much impact as is predicted, the future will be even more laden with sensors that can be commandeered for law enforcement surveillance. And this is a world far apart from one in which opportunities for surveillance have gone dark.
So to cut to the chase on that, there's nothing that would stop our government at some point from hypothetically calling up Amazon and saying, flip the switch on the Echo so that since it's already listening, it's now recording for us.
Correct. Theoretically, the government could get a court order mandating that that Amazon do so. Now, I'm not sure if the Amazon Echo has the ability to be remotely reprogrammed like that. I suspect it does.
Well, I'm assuming it does, because you can do firmware updates to add new features in or fix bugs. So why not do a firmware update that takes whatever the Echo is listening to and just funnels it off to someone else.
Yep. Absolutely could be doing that. Or, you know, the government could also compel a court order to or compel Amazon through a court order to provide for the government anything stored on a particular person's Echo. Stored on the cloud.
Right.
Which is it's through a legal court order here. I don't want the government to not be able to get a warrant to search me if they suspect me of doing some wrongdoing.
Well, that's what a warrant is for.
That's what a warrant is for, right. The issue, the thing that we get cranky about is first of all, anything done without a warrant. Mm-hmm. And secondly, anything that would allow anybody else to do so without needing a warrant. In other words,
bad guys, foreign agencies, other foreign spies,
criminal organizations, whatever.
Right.
All right. And that takes me to wanting to talk about security and the Internet of Things and the fact that the twain are not meeting.
And this is where I jumped to earlier in our conversation, where you're like, whoa, back it up there, boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to get through all this other stuff first.
Okay, which totally makes sense. I was just champing at the bit to jump right into this part.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, so the problem that I'm seeing here is that device makers may not be taking all the steps that they should, or in many cases just flat out aren't doing it, to ensure that whatever information these devices that are in our homes can collect is being done in a way that ensures our privacy.
Yeah, because privacy is, and we found this at CES, no one's talking about security. Like no one is going, our new Internet of Things device is awesome because it's secure. Did you have anyone tell you that?
No one. Security was never a bullet point on their list.
It wasn't a part of the conversation. It wasn't a part of the marketing materials. It wasn't a part of anything.
Right. And when we brought it up, or at least when I brought it up, in many cases, the answer was, well, your Wi-Fi network has a password on it, right? And this is just staying on your network.
Right.
And that's not really security in the sense that we need.
Do you know how many webcams there are out there with no password on them?
A lot. There's a website that you can go to and just randomly see webcams.
Yeah. And there's also, like, even webcams that have passwords, the vast majority of them aren't getting changed by the user, the default password.
Right. Well, yeah. And in many cases, it's because the end user doesn't know or understand. And so they just simply plug the thing in, and the setup is simple and it works. And now they can monitor their front door when they're away from home.
Yeah. And this stuff is, I mean, this is going to be an issue. This is going to be a significant issue. There are things that are going to be done to people or to companies or to government employees or to defense contractors because of this stuff. You know, criminal activities are going to take place.
Oh, of course.
And we need as consumers, we need to be demanding security and privacy for all these Internet of Things devices, all these Internet Connect devices. And I personally won't be buying anything that's not secure. And I mean, like, I was all excited about Nest, for instance, mm-hmm. when Nest first came out. And as soon
as the thermostat,
right. And I'm still very excited about the Nest Protect, the smoke detector. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of really, really cool stuff with that.
Yes, they are.
But I'm not keen on Google having more data about me based on the Nest or the Protect. And I certainly wouldn't buy one at this point without understanding the all of the security and privacy controls that are on it, if there are any.
Yeah, I totally get that. I just recently installed an Echo B3 thermostat, mm-hmm. which is competitor to the Nest. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I did, actually it was part of the setup process, the thermostat wants you to create passwords so that that no one that shouldn't be able to get into your thermostat remotely would be able to.
Well, but then how are those passwords stored? What technology is being used to communicate those passwords? Right, you know, are the passwords being stored on a server somewhere? And if so, are they properly hashed?
You know, I don't know if they're properly hashed, but it looks like now I have some homework.
Yeah, it would be really. We should probably be doing some coverage, dedicated coverage of the security aspect of the Internet of Things.
Yes, we should.
Let's do that.
All right, I'll call Echo B. I'll start there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, find out. Let's find out what some of these folks are doing. And the webcam thing is truly just a mess.
You know, I'm going to open this up a little bit. And listeners, if there are devices that you want us to check out for security, let us know so we know which ones matter to you.
Yeah. There you go. That's a great idea.
Where could they do that?
ACM@macobserver.com would be one way.
That would be a good way. Yep.
They can look us up on our brand new Twitter account.
Oh, that's right. We're on Twitter.
At Context Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We'd love a follow, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us validation.
Please give us validation. Yes. You can also look us up at macobserver.com/ACM. That's too many. I'm giving people too many choices.
You know, that's okay. You only gave them three choices. If it had been four, that would have been too much.
Too much. So anyway, it's interesting. Like I said, this is going to be a mess. I mean, can you imagine? I cannot right now. I would not put an internet connected lock on my door.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with it, the internet connected lock, but
yet.
But as we're having this conversation, I'm thinking, okay, so what internet connected devices am I using on a daily basis right now? And I'm making a list already of companies I need to call and talk to about the security they have in place, because I have that thermostat now. I have all of these HomeKit devices. I have a home monitoring webcam set up. I have an automatic in my car now. And that goes on the internet. That's tracking every place I drive, how
an
fast.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. You don't know what I'm talking about. An automatic is this little dongle that plugs in to the data port that's built into cars.
Yeah. Just for your insurance company?
No, it's for me.
Okay.
No, if my insurance company said they wanted to put that in my car, one of their own trackers, I would go find a different insurance company.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either. That's insane to me.
Yeah, that's horrible. So, but what the automatic does is it lets you know whatever error codes your car is generating, like when your check engine light comes on,
right?
And it can give you really good information about your fuel consumption, and stuff, but. It's also tracking. It has a GPS, so it knows right where you are, and all that data is getting logged. And how secure is that, really?
Yeah, where is it being? Yeah, who has access to it?
Right.
Are they tracking it and selling it?
I don't believe they are, but I'm going to verify that.
That would be a good thing to know. I mean, yeah, even automobiles right now. There's some of the electronic clocks. There are devices that in the hands of bad guys right now that can unlock a lot of modern cars in a way that's not going to leave any marks or other signs of forced entry.
Yeah, that's not cool.
No, it's not cool. And automobile manufacturers, they should be thinking about security more than, you know, a startup making some new clever light bulbs that'll listen to you go lights on or something.
Which is kind of cool when you think about it. But at the same time, I want my stuff secure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the flip side of all the stuff that the Harvard study was talking about. So the message here is the government should stop complaining about going dark because there's all these surveillance opportunities for them. Well, that's nifty, but that means that the bad guys have access to them too. Right. Now, the bad guys aren't probably going to be able to compel the manufacturer to send a firmware update.
But if the government does, then that's good enough because it's there.
Well, that's true. Yeah, once it's actually flipped, yeah, that's for sure. But if there's a switch that can be flipped remotely by a manufacturer, that switch can be flipped remotely by the bad guys. Conceivably.
Yeah, my assumption is that. Man, I'm making a really big assumption here, and I could be completely wrong, but my assumption is that there would be a key exchange between the device and the manufacturer's server to verify that this is a legit firmware update. And if so, then it would be unless you as a bad guy had access to those software keys. Then you wouldn't be able to do anything.
We don't know.
No, we don't know. And as I think about it, knowing how some of these devices actually work, there's no key exchange. You could just push. If you knew what the code needed to be, you could push a firmware update out.
What if the switch to activate a microphone? What if that doesn't need a firmware update to flip? What if it could just be flipped?
Yeah, if it's a software setting, that's it.
Yeah, you know, same thing with motion detectors. I mean, you know, there's just so much that can be hacked. I am far from a Luddite. I love technology. You know, in my day we turned a light switch on and it was just on. You turned it on at the wall.
And the camel hair started to glow in the bulb.
Exactly. That's not what I'm wanting here. I love all this Internet of Connected things, Internet of Things stuff. All these connected products. Home automation is just, you know, I cannot wait for the day when the lights get turned off behind me and they get turned on in front of me, you know, all the devices have learned my patterns for when I'm waking up and when I'm working and, you know, exactly when the hot water should be delivered and the rest of the time it's not hot. And we're living in science fiction times as it is, and it's only going to get better, but we need people thinking about security. Now, do you remember like all the problems? This is true for both Apple and Microsoft, but especially Microsoft. All the problems with Windows, because mm-hmm. Windows was not built to be secure.
Right.
It was built for other. It was built to meet other agendas.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The primary agenda was market share.
Right. Yeah. Well, market share and you know, just allowing IT to enterprise world to do stuff. I mean, the security was an afterthought for Windows. And to a certain extent, it was for the Mac, too. Mac was built better. OS X was built even better.
Right. Well, at least with OS X, since it was using a version of Unix as its foundation, there was security baked in.
Right. Absolutely.
But there was definitely more Apple could have done in the beginning.
And this cost Microsoft problems. You know, I would imagine that the global economy was wrecked to the tune of hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, because of all, you remember when viruses were a thing?
Man.
Right. You know, and like, you know, entire corporations would like lose their computers to some kind of virus. And, you know, botnets are still a thing. Anyway, the point is that we need the Internet of Connected Devices, the Internet of Things. We need the device makers thinking about security now and not later.
I agree. Yeah. I'm just loving the devices that I have set up and have been testing. I love that I leave my apartment and the lights are going to go off when I leave. When I get back home at night, the lights are turned on for me. I can have the thermostat change temperature based on if I'm there or not. And I can get remote alerts if something is happening in my place, like there's loud noises or motion detected.
Sure.
Yeah, I just love that there's all these different things that can work together now. And I love the remote access, but the whole security thing, that's, and the privacy thing, and who can really get at this data? Because I'm generating scads of data right now that in the hands of the wrong people, it could be really bad.
Well, I mean, you and I aren't doing too much that anyone's going to be interested in.
No, not really.
What we have to worry about is, you know, our bank account being compromised or our credit card numbers being stolen. You know, and identity fraud, identity.
Yeah, identity theft is a much bigger threat for us now than someone commandeering my webcam.
Right. That's absolutely the case. But still, we want these device makers to be thinking about this stuff now, not 5 years from now, because, oh my goodness, it's a problem, because it's going to be a problem. There are going to be problems with this stuff.
Yes. Yeah, there are. Did you hear about the problem that Nest had recently where... It was during one of the big West Coast snowstorms, so it was like really cold, and they'd pushed out a software update, and it knocked a lot of Nest thermostats off of their Wi-Fi network, so they didn't have an internet connection.
Oh, solid.
Yeah, and without that internet connection, the Nest thermostat doesn't work.
Excellent. No, I didn't. I somehow missed that.
Yeah, that was like a month or two ago. And it shows... to me, part of the problem, which is that we have these devices, they're really cool when they do what they're supposed to, but because they're also on the internet, I mean, there are other issues that can come up that people haven't even been anticipating yet. And if device makers aren't doing everything they can to make sure that we're safe with these devices, someone's going to get hurt in a bad way at some point.
At some point. It is only a matter of time.
Yeah. And with the Nest thing, people were going to their local hardware stores and buying the, you know, like the $10 little Mercury style switches.
Right.
Just so they could rip their Nest off the wall and hook this on so they could get their heater to turn on so they wouldn't freeze.
Sure. Yeah. Cause that's a good thing. Not freezing.
Yeah. Not freezing. I like that.
Yeah. And the device makers aren't going to care unless we care, unless we, the consumers, care.
Right.
So ask. If you're going to buy, ask. Do research. Yes. Buy the stuff that is protected if it's out there yet. We need to do some more research on our end too, Jeff.
Yes, we do. Because there's a lot that we don't know. And when I say we, I'm using the collective, us as consumers.
Right. Right. All right. So we have now taken two of our segments to talk about this.
We're good talkers.
Yeah, we are, sort of. One could argue that a good talker would not have taken two segments.
One could, But in this case, one chooses not to.
That's true. One chooses not to. So we have, do you want to do two short other topics or just go into one of them?
I say let's go into one of them.
Okay, which one? Which one interests you the most?
I think this wireless charging thing.
Okay, all right. Interesting. All right. Well, then wireless charging. Apple's supposedly working on it.
Yes. So the deal is that that Apple is working on a wireless charging system that they want to put into the iPhone and then at some point into other products they make as well that need to have rechargeable batteries. And the difference from what Apple is doing in relation to products that are on the market already is that Apple wants to do this so that you don't need to have that sort of contact style wireless system, meaning inductive charging, which is what you can go out and get today. Like you can get replacement batteries for, say, your mouse. And then with those in your mouse, you set the whole device on this little USB plate. And even though there's nothing going into connecting ports or anything onto the mouse, it still charges. And it's because it's using an electromagnetic field that's being generated by the little plate. But they have to be really, really close. So like the mouse has to sit on the plate. And if that doesn't happen, then it doesn't work. Well, Apple's idea is why not do this so that you can be farther away and use like a near field magnetic resonance sort of thing where you're charging your devices and all you have to do is just be near the charging point, which could be, say, in your iMac. And so then when you get near your iMac, your iPhone is just charging. And when you get, say, a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse that use batteries, because they're sitting right there in front of your Mac, those batteries are being charged as well. And you're about to say something. Go ahead.
Nope. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
All right. And so the idea is that we get freed from the wires, which is what inductive charging gets us. But then we also get freed from being philosophically tethered to charging a device in one specific place.
So really what Apple's wanting to do here is like a Tesla, a Nikolai Tesla charging tower thingy.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, they want to have some sort of radiative wireless charging, and all you have to do is be near this field and your devices charge.
Which is interesting. So like one thing that that the Android world quickly embraced was inductive charging, where mm-hmm. you basically set the device onto some kind of charging plate or charging station. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few things at this point that Android has that an iPhone doesn't have. I've used there was, I believe I was actually in a test area, but I've been at a Starbucks where they had, Starbucks has built these inductive charging stations into tables. Mm-hmm. And I believe that lots of Starbucks have those.
Yes. Yeah, you were definitely in one of the testing areas. It has expanded out now. There aren't any Starbucks near me, unfortunately, that have the inductive charging tables.
So the table, okay. Because the Starbucks in my area got the tables first, but only Android devices could use them.
Right. Well, and it was only certain Android devices.
Yeah, it's only an Android device where that's been built in.
Right.
But, to the device.
But what they did, or they meaning Starbucks, was they were getting a hold of a bunch of little adapters that you can plug into different smartphones. So some were for iPhones and some were for other Android phones. And you could go into the store, borrow one of these, plug it into your phone, and then you're now inductive charging through this adapter.
Right. So in the case of so there was a I think they were doing micro USB 30 pin dot connector and then a lightning connector.
Mm-hmm.
So and it was a device about, I don't know, inch and a half long, maybe 2 inches long. That had a circle in the end with the stem. You plug the stem in to your to the port on your device, and now all of a sudden you can do inductive charging, whether or not you have it built in,
which is great. And I mean, when you look at the way people are using their technology in coffee shops, if you are on your computer, odds are your iPhone is sitting on the table next to your computer. It's not in your bag. It's not in your pocket. And yeah. So why not let it charge while it's just sitting there?
Right. And that is cool. Actually, I think this is really, really clever of Starbucks to do this. I don't know. I think that was a pilot program. I don't know. It's, you know, I have no idea if they're going to be rolling this out elsewhere. Because it seems like the chargers, the dongles, the adapters that you're borrowing, are ripe for.
Yeah, people were stealing those.
Steal or even just taking them by mistake.
Well, if you take it by mistake, you've still stolen it.
You have, but there's a difference between There's somewhat of a difference between oops and I'm a take this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The end result is the same. No one else gets to use it.
Right. So then they've got to replace them. And they basically had someone, I think this is a third party company that was managing this program for them, and that they would send someone in once a week to, you know,
inventory. Take in new adapters.
Yeah. Inventory what they had and replace ones that are missing. And just super clever of Starbucks, in my opinion, and also really convenient. That said,
mm-hmm.
I certainly had times when I was doing this and my phone would move off the plate. Get up and walk away, but, you know, I'd nudge it or someone would put something, you know, someone put a newspaper on the table and you know, nudge my phone, you know, and sometimes it would just spin, right? You know, so I've got a case, and maybe that case has got a, isn't completely flat on the ground, and so, you know, the phone would spin and the adapter would go off of the device, off of the charging plate.
Yeah, and see, and that's how close you have to be with these inductive charging systems. If you move a couple inches, it's not working anymore.
You know, and like your home, I know that you've got batteries in your is it your Apple mouse?
Yeah, I have a one of Apple's Magic Mice.
Yep.
And I got this product from Mobi, and it's a replacement battery setup for the mouse. So I pulled out the AA's and put this in, and it comes with a USB charging plate. So I can just set the whole thing on the little charging plate, and I never have to replace the batteries in my Magic Mouse. It's just always good to go.
Which is absolutely fantastic, unless, of course, your cat comes and knocks it off. And now it's not charged, and you got to work, and you don't have a charge.
Right. And, you know, at least in my case, when I'm using that mouse, it's more of a gesture device as opposed to a pointing device. So, you know, if I can't do gestures on it, it's not that big of a deal. But
yeah, but big picture. I mean, you know, yeah, a lot of accidents happen. Things get moved. The, you know, your housekeeper, the cleaning service comes in and you know, you set your mouse up while you vacated your home office to be charged. I mean, it's not inductive charging is cool, but it's not perfect.
Right. And yeah, you have to remember to put the device on the plate.
Right. And it has to stay there.
Right.
Near field charging would be a step better. Now, of course, you know, an actual like Nikola Tesla system where you don't even have to be near it would be even better, but then I think we'd probably all be dead.
I think it's very likely, or at least we'd be cooked enough for dinner.
Yeah,
but dead.
Not really. I don't know the physics behind that.
So All right.
This really feels like one of those things where Apple is looking at inductive charging and saying, yeah, that's nice, but I think we can do something better. So let's just not do this crappy thing until we can actually do the better thing.
I think that's what's happening. And here's what they're coming up against right now. The farther away you get from that electromagnetic field, the weaker it is. And it gets very weak very fast.
Sure.
So one solution would be you crank up the energy output much higher so that field stays strong for a greater distance. But now that creates other problems because now you're creating interference with other devices. If you get the power level high enough, it's bad for our bodies and potentially. And for people that have, say, like pacemakers, you don't want to do anything that would be a problem for that pacemaker.
Right.
So instead of ramping up the power output higher, you need to figure out a different way to deliver that radio field so that it remains effective over a greater distance. And that's what Apple's messing with right now.
Right. And just imagine just not having to think about charging.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah. Be great for our watches too.
Oh, it'd be awesome. Yeah. You know, get a Mac that has this built into it. And then get like a little portable one that plugs into the power outlet in your car. So you get in your car and you're just charging your iPhone because you're in your car.
Yeah. Every time.
Yeah. Just all the time. I would love that.
Yep. That would be fun. So I this is something that I'm hoping there's some substance to this rumor. What was the source of the story?
This came from, I believe, Bloomberg.
And Bloomberg is saying Apple is doing this, or Bloomberg is noting that there's a patent involved and Apple could do this?
Bloomberg is noting that insider sources are saying Apple is working very hard on this. And what they're hoping is that they can work through everything and have a reliable system in time for the 2017 iPhone rollout.
Right, so that would be the iPhone 7S, theoretically.
The iPhone 7S.
Right. So not this year's iPhone, next year's iPhone.
Right. Right.
Well, I hope that there's some substance to this. I hope that I mean, and there probably is. I mean, there probably, you know, so it's said that Apple's working on it with partners in the U.S. and Asia. So yeah, Apple probably is working on it. I hope that this comes to market, I guess.
I hope it does too. Yeah, I think it'd be really awesome.
Yeah, so do I. That would be lots of fun. I also hope it's safe.
I can't imagine Apple would release it if it wasn't.
Well,
cooking your customers' internal organs is a bad way to get them to buy more products. Because
yeah, generally. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It really is. It really, really is. All right. Well, we will see. We will see. That's definitely going to be a next step in all these mobile devices, all these mobile battery powered devices. Not needing to charge them is going to be a greatly freeing concept.
I'm going to go mostly pedantic on you and say not needing to plug them into something to charge them.
I will accept your correction, sir.
Why, thank you.
I will accept your correction. Not needing to. What my thought process was not needing to actively charge them without not needing to think about charging.
I knew that's where you were going.
Yeah, but the correction is appropriate. I will accept it.
I just felt totally compelled to call you out.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. You're the best.
I've got your back like that.
All right. Well, speaking of backs, I think we're done. We're at the back end of the show.
Okay. Now I see how you're stretching that that transition. I've got it. Oh, man.
That was I might have pulled a hammy on that one,
man. Yeah, you're probably gonna need to go see your chiropractor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And what was the Twitter thing again? We are Context Machine.
At Context Machine.
You can hit us up there too.
Yeah. And you can also know that our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, that our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. That's very, very important. And mm-hmm. we appreciate it. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We will see you online at the Mac Observer.